This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor, welcoming Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, to comment on the war in Eurasia, the war in its fifth week, beginning its fifth week, soon enough, the war between what appears to be Moscow and Kyiv. We spend time in each capital each week from the point of view of, and the professor takes us first to Moscow today, then to Kyiv, and finally to Brussels, the headquarters of NATO, opposing Moscow, and yet not in the battle. The battle is entirely between Kyiv and Moscow so far. I remind the professor and all of us that what we're witnessing is a vindication of his article published in 1904, The Geographical Pivot of History, which he submitted to the Royal Geographical Society, and it was called the Heartland Theory. At the time, it was very controversial. The professor divided the world, the planet, into three parts. The world island, which is Eurasia, and you can include Africa at the time because of the colonies that were important to the Europeans. The offshore islands, that would be Britain and Japan, when the professor provided this map. And it was mighty controversial that the British were considered offshore. And finally, the outlying islands. That would be North America, South America, and the Pacific, Australia. In other words, the U.S., not very important. The world island is where everything turns. And the center of the world island is Russia, called the Heartland. And many years later, when the professor was a little more accepted for his radical understanding of how geography is destiny, he explained his theory this way. Who rules East Europe commands the heartland. Who rules the heartland commands the world island. Who rules the world island commands the world. Professor, you are vindicated. We now witness another instance of the heartland projecting power to battle over the east part of Europe between France and Moscow, that period called the Bloodlands. That battle is ongoing, so I want to take us first to the Moscow point of view. Given your vindication, knowing that the counselors of Vladimir Putin and Vladimir Putin are fans of your theory, the Heartland Theory, how do you measure their doing now in the fourth to fifth week? Good evening to you.
Good evening, sir, and thank you so much for reminding me of things that I have. I'm still thinking about it, but that was when I really wrote it down. What can we say about Moscow today? The dominant figure in Moscow is Mr. Putin, who will turn 70 on, I think, October 7th of this year. I don't see him, in other words, as being a future major sort of military kind of conqueror leading Russia. What Mr. Putin is trying to figure out now is simply how he's going to stay in power after losing a war. It's quite clear that although he's said that this is just a pause and that there's going to be a second phase in which they're going to try to divide Ukraine into East Ukraine and West Ukraine, that's very much a question, and it will depend on how successful Putin is in Moscow politics. I think his stock, the value of his stock, has been marked down to market. If I may, I would like to draw a parallel to someone whom it turns out Putin admires greatly, namely Ivan Grozny, or Ivan the Dread, or Ivan the Terrible, who was he lived from 1530 to 1584. And he was two things. He did two things that are quite similar to Putin. First of all, he was a conqueror. He made his career, he made his reputation when he first ascended the Russian throne by conquering Kazan, which in those days, in 1552, was a Tatar Khanate. It wasn't part of Russia at all, about 500 miles east of Moscow. And then in 4 years later, he conquered Astrakhan, which is in the Volga Delta, about 800 miles southeast. In other words, he pushed the frontiers of the Russian state into something like the gateways of true Central Asia and also the gateways of true southeast Central Asia, where the stands and so forth are today. So he made his initial reputation as a warrior. However, for 30 years thereafter, he was involved in a wasting war in what's today the Baltic countries, the so-called Livonian Wars. But the first point is he was a seemingly victorious general. The second thing that he did, which is very similar to Putin, is that he left no heir. Now, Putin has no heir because he has three daughters by his first wife and another daughter by his 38-year-old mistress. Ivan had no heirs because he beat Ivan Ivanovich to death with his fabled iron rod, as tall as he was, in 1581. And that meant that the man who could have carried on the dynasty founded by the Normans, by the Rus, the so-called Rurikid dynasty, no longer had an heir who was capable of having children. And the result was that a feeble-minded son of Ivan took the throne called Fyodor Zvonar, King Fyodor the Bell Ringer, and he died in 1598. And here's the point. What followed the inability to fill the throne in Moscow with the death of the Bell Ringer in 1598 was what's called the Time of Troubles, which lasted until 1613. And it was only in that year that Michael Romanov finally became the Tsar. So my point is that a power vacuum at the top in Moscow is something about which we really should worry. When our president, with really quite extraordinary foolishness, says this man should not be permitted to stay in office, it may be that that's what we think privately, but that's not the language of diplomacy. That's not the language that heads of state use. That is not a way. That's not something that is going to make Putin at all forthcoming in negotiation. It was a terrible mistake. So the question that faces us now is not just, is there going to be more war in Ukraine? It's a bigger question, which is when Putin either is ejected, as I think it's quite likely, or dies, which is inevitable, how is the post of dictator of the new Russia, which is not something that was envisioned when communism fell. They thought they were going to have elected presidents, but Putin has cheated. Russia still has a democratic constitution, but Putin cheats. The question is, what will the changes be in Russia? And for anybody who knows Russian history, changes that are at the level of who will be the Hossein, who will be the big man in charge, are enormous and portentous changes.
And Professor, because of your heartland theory, Russia's fate determines, to my understanding, the fate of the world island. If Russia is successful, the world island will be, and vice versa. Is that accurate?
Well, I think that is accurate in the sense that Russia is the pivot. It's at the center of all of this. And if Russia goes badly, then the areas around Russia are going to feel propagating waves of instability coming from there. If Russia becomes a leader, it's quite possible that Russia could become a constitutional country and become a major leader. She certainly has immense human and natural endowments. But if that happens, that will change everything for the better. But there's no question, I believe, that history has vindicated my view from more than 100 years ago that Russia is at the middle.
Professor H.J. Machender, International Relations, the point of view of Moscow. We're going to Kyiv next. Remarks by President Zelensky about war end. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.